Good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming. I apologize beforehand. Unfortunately, the sound system is down, and we only heard about it this morning, so we couldn't arrange for an alternative option. And I apologize to Rav Schechter for needing to strain a little bit more. I want to thank the Harry H. Baron Ask OU Outreach program, which this is, I think, the third or fourth year, Baruch Hashem, that we've had this Labor Day program jointly in cooperation. I want to thank Rav Schechter for it. This is now a real chazaka, our fourth year as our Labor Day Yachikala, and it's always unbelievable to hear from Rav Schechter. It's very rare that you come across a man with such a vast knowledge, with such humility, and very unassuming. And it's a tremendous kavod for us to have him and to hear the shir. The shir today is dedicated, two dedications, one for Shlema, for Yecheskel Emanuel Osher ben Michal Bracha, who's undergoing surgery presently, and also by Mr. and Mrs. Howard Reese, Zeche Nishma Shmuel David ben Yerachmiel Tzvi, on his father.
Everyone should please continue to eat. Don't stop eating just because I'm going to give the shir. Shalom Aleichem. Good morning, everybody. We're going to discuss the different issues that come up when one is away for Shabbos. The first issue, of course, is Makom Hadlakas Neiros Shabbos. Many people have the practice that when you visit by someone else on Shabbos, the woman who is visiting benches licht in the same place where the balabasta benches licht. So Moshe Feinstein has a whole tshuva where he tries to justify this practice, but he says basically it's against what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. In the Shulchan Aruch it says that you're supposed to be mishtatef bepruta. They quote the din from Hilchas Chanukah and they apply it to Hilchas Hadlokas Neiros, that the principle is that Hadlokas Haneiros, both on Shabbos and on Chanukah, is supposed to be Hadloka bebeso, in my home. So let's say if I'm eating on Friday night in your home and I'm going to go back to sleep in my own home, so I'm only visiting your home, b'ikroi b'alma, and I'm going to sleep in my home, that's b'kvius. So the home that I use b'kvius is basi, so I have to bench licht at home. If I'm going to light candles and the candles will probably go out before I'm going to come home, I'm going to eat there by the neighbor a couple of hours and schmooze and talk Lashon Hara, whatever I'm going to do there on Friday night. Then I'm going to come home, the candles will be already gone out. So then you can't say a bracha. It's a bracha levatol. What are you saying a bracha on Hadlokas Haneiros? If you're not going to get Hanor on Shabbos, you should have longer candles so that when you come back home, you'll be able to get Hanor. Or many poskim are of the opinion that in Europe, the Gdolim are of the opinion that you can say Lahadlik Ner Shal Shabbos on electric bulbs. It's not so romantic, but still. Most of the poskim held that has the din of a ner, an esh, and you can say a bracha on hadlokas haneiros. If I have two different apartments in Sen Shulchan Aruch, let's say there are some people that have like that. They have one apartment where they sleep, and a few blocks away, an apartment where they eat. Let's say all the children sleep in one apartment, and the parents sleep in the other apartment, a few blocks away from each other. and all the children come to eat at the parents' home. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Tshuvas HaRashba in Hilchas Chanukah, they quote that if you have Mokam Achila versus Mokam Shina, the place where you eat versus the place where you sleep, it doesn't mean the bedroom versus the dining room. That's not what the Rashba is talking about. He's talking about two different apartments. He's quoting the Rashba saying based on the Gemara and Eretz, if you have two different apartments, in one home you sleep, in one home you eat, so the Mokam Achila is Iker, that's considered the Beso. But over here, in this case, where I'm just eating by you tonight, that's b'ikroi b'alma, I'm going to go back to sleep in my own home, that's b'kvius, so the mokum, the place b'kvius, is considered beso. The Magen Avraham quotes that women had a practice that when they would go to, when they had to go to mikvah on Friday night, they would bench licht in the shul. The mikvah would be right next to the shul or in the basement of the shul. They would go to, there would be madlik neiris in the shul. So he says that it's not proper. He says that you're not yotze hadlokas haneiris. Some people think you light neiris on Times Square, light the neiris Hanukkah on Times Square. You may get a lot of pesumi nisa, but it's not hadlokah bebeso. Hadlokah has to be bebeso. It says in Shulchan Aruch that when the chazan lights the neiris in the Beis HaKnesses, nobody's yotze, because it has to be hadlokah bebeso. So the same rule applies to Shabbos, hadlokas neiris Shabbos, as applies to hadlokas neiris Chanukah. And Hilchas Chanukah, the Gemara has the rule that if I'm a guest in someone else's home, the Gemara says you should be mishtate bepruta with the balabas. You should be kain ha-shutfas and the candles. And many of the poskim hold, the Mishnah Berurah quotes Achronim who say that mishtate bepruta if you want to, that's a kula. And if you want to, so light your own menorah. What's the problem? And many other poskim say, no, you cannot light your own menorah. It's not beso. You're only a guest over here. If you're a guest for more than 30 days, So then it's called beso. If I plan to stay there for more than 30 days, I already stayed there for more than 30 days, then it's called besi. But if I'm only staying for a short period of time, the people who live here kavua. And I'm only visiting for less than 30 days, so the Gemara calls that achsenoi. That's a Gemara in Erevin, achsenoi. So in Hilcha Shabbat, in Hadlokas HaNeris Chanukah, it says achsenoi. It's really based off the people who live here kavua. I'm only here less than 30 days. Achsenoi, the only way that it's considered beso is via being mishtate bepruta. He can't light his own menorah. Many achrenim hold, not like the Mishnah Brewer quoted. Many achrenim hold, cannot light your own menorah. So that's what it says in Hilchas Shabbos, that if you're visiting by someone else and they live there in their home kavua, and you're only visiting there temporarily, aray, for less than 30 days, you should be mishtate bepruta with the balabas. Or if you have your own bedroom, so then the Mishnah Berurah says that you can do the hadlok in your bedroom. That's your private room. The dining room is shared together with the people who live there. So they live there kavua, and I'm only there less than 30 days. So it's really beisam. It's not beisi unless I'll be mishtata bepruta. Via being mishtata bepruta becomes beisi. But if they give me my own bedroom to use, private bedroom, so then the bedroom is only beisi. I'm not sharing it with the rest of the family who lives there. So then you could be madlik in the bedroom, provided, of course, you're going to use the neiris. If you're going to light neiris in the bedroom, if the balabas is makfid that you shouldn't light any candles in the bedroom, you're not allowed. He's afraid of a fire. So don't. The shaila is, if he's not afraid, or if you're going to light neiris with an electric bulb and rely on all of those poskim say that you can say a bracha on electric bulbs. Rav Moshe is of the opinion you cannot say a bracha on electric lights. But in Europe, many of the poskim, most of the poskim are of the opinion that it's okay, you can't say a bracha. So if you want a light in your own bedroom, you have to light such a thing that you'd be able to get hanor from it later on. A lot of times you go to a hotel, kosher hotel, for Shabbos. So you come Friday night, you come, the table is all set. They have the challahs on the table and the pickles and all the salads and everything is there. So in the Shulchan Aruch, everybody knows that it says when you say Kiddush, you're supposed to have the challahs covered up. So the different reasons are given in the Shulchan Aruch. So one reason is that it's supposed to be Zecha Laman, that the Lechem Mishneh that we eat on Shabbos is Zecha Laman, and the man was covered on top and on bottom with the towel. So according to that reason, you only have to cover up the challahs, but you have to cover up the challahs. So you have a tablecloth on the bottom, you have the challahs, and you should cover over. I mean, we're going to eat the meals over there.
You're eating with your mishpacha. You're sleeping.
And I'm sleeping in a different place. And they're both ikroi. They're both
right.
Ikroi.
And your wife wants the light at the mishpacha's house.
Yeah.
Is that a bracha levatol?
So it says they have a whole bunch of klalim, a whole bunch of rules and regulations. And one of the rules is that you should light in the room that's more private. So if the bedroom is private, just me and my wife are sleeping in the bedroom. The place we're going to eat is going to be 50 people there. A whole balagan there, a whole zoo with the grandchildren and everybody.
Right.
So you're really supposed to light in the room that's more private. So more correct is to light in the bedroom.
Light in the bedroom or give a pruta. What happens if you don't do that? Is it a bracha levatola?
Of Could be. They don't specify when you have the rules of Kedima, what takes precedence. They don't say if you did it, Shalei Kedin, that you're not yes. They don't say explicitly, but the Pashtus is, that should be a Bracha
Lematon. And are you over with me, make sure, like very often, our house, there's a bar mitzvah in town, so I'll have somebody sleep by my house. And I give them candles. I say, light it, light in your bedroom for me. And they say, no, I want to light, where I'm eating. So am I over, live naiver? What are my responsibility as the host of a guest who's sleeping by my house? I know the halacha and I offer it to them, but they don't listen to me.
You offered to shine. You I'd say there's no lif neiva. If you gave a suggestion, they didn't listen. There's no lif neiva. They asked the Chazon Ish that in the candy store in Bnei Brak, the owner of the store noticed that many of the people drink the soda without saying a bracha. So he asked the Chazon Ish that there's an opinion in Shulchan Aruch that some are machma for, most are not machma, that you're not allowed to give food to someone who's not going to say a bracha. So how can he sell the soda if he sees the customers are not going to say a bracha? So the Chazon Ish said, just put up a big sign that says all the drinks that we sell are shahakal, and you atas nafshecha itzalta. So you told him to say, a bracha. Here, you give him candles. You say, why don't you bench lift over here in the room? They want to do otherwise. So what can you do? You tell them that your rabbi said like this. They say their rabbi said faket. Okay. So what can you do?
If I do nothing, am I over? In other words, as host, do I have to offer them, here's candles, go light in your bedroom?
I think you ought to. Either give them candles or give them an electric bulb that'll last longer, and recommend that they should light in their bedroom. I think so. A lot of times in a hotel, when it's a religious hotel, so they have a special spot outside of the dining room, and they have all 100 women lighting candles over there. So that the Pashtus says that for sure is a bracha levatola. That's neither here nor there. That's not my private bedroom, and it's not where I'm eating. The Pashtus says in Shulchan Aruch, there's a machlokes, the Mechaber and the Ramah, about hadlokas aner. So if you have more than one family eating in the same location. So the Mechaber says, whoever lights neiros first says a bracha, and whoever lights afterwards cannot say a bracha because the room is already lit up. The whole purpose of hadlokas neiros Shabbos is to give illumination. The room is lit up. And the Ramah disagrees with the Mechaber, and he says, no. If the first balabasta, one family, they're both eating at the same table. So one balabasta is going to light candles at one end of the table. The other one is going to light candles at the other end of the table in a separate leichter. So the Mogan Avraham quotes from the Shalah that there's Tosefes Ora V'Simcha. There's going to be more illumination because of the fact that you're lighting at the other end of the table. So the second one can also say a bracha. But if you have 100 families, 100 women are lighting Neris on the same table, by the time you get to the 10th one, there ain't no more Tosefes Ora V'Simcha. It's already as lit up as it's going to be over there. So the Pashtus says that for sure is not proper. That for sure is not proper. More correct is to light on electric bulbs in your bedroom upstairs. And then the post can point out, Reb Shlomo Zalman, another post can point out that you can only say brach on an electric bulb if it has a filament in it. So a piece of metal that is heated till it glows, the Rambam says, is considered havara. Is considered Eish, and that's considered a Ner. You can say Bracha L'Hadlik Ner Shal Shabbos, going to most of the poskim. But if you have a fluorescent bulb, a neon, or something like that, that just the gas is glowing. You don't have a piece of metal that's glowing because it's hot. So that Rabbi Shlomo Zalman and other poskim said you can't say Bracha L'Hadlik Ner Shal Shabbos. That's not called a Ner. It has to be Davka and Eish. So that's at home also. That's relevant. Okay. So again, when you come to a kosher hotel for Shabbos or for Yom Tov, whatever, so usually they have all the food on the table. So the minig is that we cover over the challah for various reasons. So one reason is that it's Zecher Leman. The man was covered on top and on bottom with the tal. So then you only have to cover over the challahs, but you should really cover the challahs. A lot of people don't realize the waiters, when they set up the table, do not cover the challahs. So one should cover the challahs. The other reason, the agadic reason that's given, the other agadic reason that's given for covering over the chalas, is that we should be careful not to hurt the feelings of the wine, hurt the feelings of the challah. That if you have chitim and you have yayin, and you're interested in eating both, so really you should say hamoitzi before you say the bar piagofim. We're not going to do that. We're going to say kiddush first. So Kedei shelo yira hapas by shasoy, not to hurt the feelings of the challah, so we cover over the challah. We don't really think that the challah knows what's happening, and the challah isn't really hurt. It doesn't really feel insulted. But we should train ourselves, even on inanimate objects, we should train ourselves not to hurt the feelings of human beings. So we should practice on the challah and on the wine. Okay. So according to that agadic reason, so it's only necessary to cover over the challah, it's not necessary to cover over the pickles and everything else on the table. But the halachic reason, that Tosfos quotes, the three reasons that they quote in Shulchan Aruch, the halachic reason, not the agadic reason, is that we want to demonstrate, every day we eat supper, every day we eat lunch, we want to demonstrate that we're bringing the food l'kvod Shabbos. So you're not supposed to have any food on the table. So more correct is you shouldn't have the challah, shouldn't have any food on the table. You have already the food on the table, so you should cover over all of the food, not just cover over the challah. More correct is to cover over whatever they, a lot of times they have already the gefilte fish, or they have the cantaloupe, or they have a lot of the salads are there. So more correct is to cover everything before you begin to say Kiddush, to demonstrate that everything is being brought l'kvod al Shabbos. Should be. And it should be on Shabbos morning by the meal also. There's room to distinguish between Friday night and Shabbos morning. And I remember Rav Soloveitchik thought that one should be machmer even on Shabbos morning also, to have all the food covered up when you say the Kiddush. When one goes to a non-Jewish hotel, so you can have all kinds of additional problems. So let's say when a person lives in a building, and the only way to get into the building is to stand in front of the building, and the guard inside will see your face on the closed circuit TV, and he'll know to open the door. So there is an issue of ksiva over here. If I walk in front of a camera knowing that my face, my image is going to appear somewhere else, so the Rambam writes that the prohibition of ksiva doesn't only apply if you write letters and you write words. If you make a picture, it's also a violation of ksiva. Machlek is Rashi in the Rambam. And Rambam holds that that's a melacha deraisa. That's why you have to be careful now. In New York City, I don't know about over here in New York, when a woman gives birth to a baby, so they take the woman's fingerprint and they make the baby's footprint to make sure they don't mix up the babies. So if the baby's born on Shabbos, the woman has to be careful not to push her finger down. If the nurse wants to push her finger down, that's not her fault. But the woman should be careful. Your letter should be careful not to push her finger down. You're making a picture that's unique. Your fingerprint is different from everybody else. That's why it's good for identifying the baby. And you're not allowed to make a picture on Shabbos. You should try to get away from that also. Misaya, usually we speak if it's a Jew. If it's a Jewish nurse who's going to do it, that's an issue of Misaya. But let's say it's a Goyish nurse who's going to do it. So it's not a question of Misaya. It's not right. It's hard to hold your finger limp and have someone else push it to do the home malacha. But you have to be careful. You have to try to explain to them why they shouldn't take your fingerprint on Shabbos. But you certainly shouldn't push it down. So There is a malach of ksiva that applies even if you make a picture. So if I stand in front of even a ksav sheina shal kayama is not a nisa deraisa, it's a nisa derabana. So let's say I stand in front of a camera and my face will appear on a closed circuit TV screen somewhere where the guard is sitting. He can't see directly outside. He's sitting all the way inside. So if the only way to get in is to stand in front of the screen, to stand in front of the camera, I'm causing ksiva. So some gedolim write, there's a din in the Yerushalmi about kosei beraglo. If you put a pen in between your toes and you write with your foot, so that's considered kalach hayad. So some say that it's a double derabanan over here because it's ksav sheino shel kayom and it's kosei beraglo because I walk in front of the camera. Is that called kosei beraglo? Kosei beraglo is kalach hayad. If you put a pen in between your toes, that's abnormal for most people. But if a person walks in front of a camera, that's the normal way to do the ksiva.
Walking in front of the camera is less than kosei beraglo. You're not doing anything physical.
I'm walking in such a place where I know that my image is going to appear. But if I wouldn't walk there, my image wouldn't appear on the screen. So because I walk there, so I'm doing the ma'aseh. Walking is also a ma'aseh. So I would have thought that this is more chomer than kaseh beraglo. So some suggest that this is a double derabbanan, this is a shvus, the shvus, and if the only way to get into my hotel room is to stand in front of the camera, this will be a shvus, the shvus b'makam mitzvah. Very questionable. It's ksav she'enu shel kayama that I can see, but it's I don't know if that's called kaseh beraglo, that pashtus is. Uh-huh. And on the tape, you see an image, or when you play it, you'll see an image. Could be it's not called Sheinu Shel Kayama. Okay. So I would think it's not proper. It's not proper to walk in front of a camera. A lot of people have these cameras in their home, that whoever comes, whoever knocks on the front door, so I see inside who it is knocking on the front door. So you should really turn off your screen on Erev Shabbos so that the Shomer Shabbos that come to your home won't be Mechal Shabbos. They won't be causing a psik, even though they're not interested, it's a psikresh lo nichalei, but it's not proper to psikresh lo nichalei is a machlekes whether it's permissible or not. So it's not right to do that lechatchila. If a person has an electric appliance which he uses to plant or to harvest or to plow, so he's harnessing a natural force of electricity in order to do a malacha of chorish or zareya or kotzer. So we assume that that certainly is prohibited. To use electricity in order to do a malacha is prohibited. What if a person plugs in a refrigerator or a person plugs in a fan? Or an air conditioner. He uses electricity to cause something to function. So if you have a broken machine and you fix it on Shabbos, that's called Mesaken Mana. I have a twisted fork and I can't use it the way it is and I straighten it out. So that's Mesaken Mana. But if I have a fork and a knife and it doesn't help if it's sitting on the table, I have to pick up the fork and the knife and cut the meat and eat it. So that's not called Mesaken Mana. That's called using the instrument. So what if I have a refrigerator? The refrigerator is not broken, but I didn't plug it in. When you plug it in, then it's going to function. So is that called using? That's called hishtamshus in the kli. I'm harnessing a natural force in order to have the refrigerator function. Is that called misakin mana? Or is that called using the instrument? So this was the big issue that was debated in recent years. The Chazon Ish was of the opinion that whenever you use electricity to have something function, to have the air conditioner function, or to have the refrigerator function, he felt that this, he was convinced that this was a malacha deraisa. He was just not sure which malacha, whether it's masakin mana or bona. It's very strange. How could he be so sure that it's a malacha if he's not sure which malacha? I don't know. That was his opinion. And others were not so convinced. Other Gedolim thought that the minatorah should really be mutter. It's like the fork and the knife. You're just using the kli. It's not mesaken mana. Nothing is broken. But they thought that it should be an iser mesaken mana midirabbanon because there is such a run on the Gemara in Ksubis. The Gemara in Ksubis talks about setting a system in motion. If you have a drain pipe that collects all of the water from the roof and it goes down the drain pipe, and the drain pipe is stopped up with a gook, with a lot of leaves and with twigs and so on, and you push your foot there down the drain pipes, so everything should start functioning. So also, it's not really anything, nothing is broken, it's just that it's clogged up. So the Ran says in that Gemara that that's a Mesaken Mana Midirabbana. To put a system in motion is a Mesaken Mana Midirabbana. So that's what many and most are of the opinion, not like the Chazon Ish. They assume that that using electricity in order to have an elevator function, in order to have a refrigerator function, in order to have an air conditioner function, that this is all malacha midirabbanan. Molid eish, that what? You mean if a light goes on? I mean there's a spark that's going to fly. So most of the poskim held that spark that flies is ein bo mamish, that doesn't count at all. That's not a problem. So some insisted that you have to be choshish for the Chazon Ish, that you're dealing with a real Issa deraisa. So let's say a person is chalashing from the heat and he wants to ask his non-Jewish neighbor to plug in the air conditioner for him, would that be considered a shvuz, the shvuz b'makom mitzvah? So many are of the opinion, yeah, we assume not like the Chazon Ish, we assume that it's only an Issa derabbanan to use electricity in order to have an elevator go, in order to have an air conditioner go. So if a person is eating his meal on the 15th floor, he shouldn't live on the 15th floor. And you shouldn't go visit someone on the 15th floor. But if he got stuck, Bimbikre, he got stuck. So to ask a non-Jew to push the elevator button, we would assume that that's a shvuz de shvuz b'makom mitzvah. Shvuz de shvuz b'makom mitzvah is a special emergency cooler. You cannot rent an apartment on the 15th floor and plan lechatchila to use this cooler every single Shabbos. It's once in a while. If you get stuck once in a while, so you have such a hefter. You have to go out of town for some reason or another. You have to be in a hotel, and then your room is on the 15th floor. So if you got stuck, be mikre, so then we would be maker like that. The shvuz, the shvuz, b'maka mitzvah. The question is, if you have, most of the hotels don't have normal keys to open the rooms anymore. They have electronic keys, electronic locks on the doors. So it's generally assumed that even though you're not really starting a system in motion, you're not plugging in the refrigerator, you're not plugging in the air conditioner, you're not having the elevator go up. You're just opening the door. So to open a lock, if it's just a mechanical lock, to open a lock, that the Mishnah is talking about using a key to open a lock on Shabbos. The Mishnah says it's mutter, so we don't have to be machmer on that. But the question is, if you have an electronic lock, so what exactly are you doing over here? You're not even setting a system in motion. It's not the same as going in an elevator. So we usually assume that that's an Issa derabbanan. We're not sure exactly what the Issa derabbanan. We usually assume that that's also an Issa of makabah patish mederabbanan.
Even if it has a light, the light's green when you put the card in?
If you have a light, I think it's an LED. I think it's a light emitting diode. It's not really a filament, not really a metal wire that glows from heat. So LEDs we assume is an Issa derabbanan. It is Havara, but it's Havara mederabbanan. So again, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to do Havara mederabbanan. So if you have a non-Jew, if you get stuck and you have to stay in this hotel, so you have to get a non-Jew open the door for you. So it's a shvuz de shvuz, the makam tzaragodl for the Havara on the LED. And it's a shvuz de shvuz b'makom mitzvah on the opening up of the electronic lock. So if you get stuck, it's not right. One should avoid this. But b'mikre, a person gets stuck once in a long while, so then this is an emergency heta that we would be making. Very often when you go to a hotel, so there are sensors in the room, so when you walk in, the lights go on automatically and the air conditioning goes on automatically. So if you know in advance that this is what's going to happen, so that's called a psik reshe, even though you're not doing it biadayim. I walk into the room and I know the air conditioner is going to go on and I know the lights are going to go on. So that's a psik reshe. That's not permissible. I'll be pashtus. That's not permissible. Pardon me? If the goy wasn't first, then it's okay. The shailas then I stay in the room. So as long as I stay in the room, so the sensor picks up the fact that I'm still there. So that's a discussion of all places in the first Perek and Bob Metziah about Rochu Umanig and that sugya. So the Paschim all discuss there. Maybe the fact that I'm present in the room, maybe that's also called my Maisa, that I'm causing it to continue to happen. Let's say I walk, well, this is not only a problem if you're going to a hotel. This is some problem when you walk in the streets, wherever you go, there are always cameras around. They're always taking videos of everybody walking in the street. That's how the police can catch all of the terrorists. So everyone's being filmed all the time. So would you say that it's ksiva if I walk in front of the camera, I'll das that I want my image to appear? I want the guard to open the door, so I go like this, I'm here, the guard should see me, so I'm causing ksiva. He doesn't see me directly, he's all the way inside, behind the door. So I'm causing ksiva, shena shel kayama, okay, maybe yes shel kayama, I'm causing ksiva on the screen. So would you say that you're not allowed to walk in the street because you're causing ksiva? So we would say that that's a psigresha de lo nichalei. Okay, psigresha lo nichalei is a machlokes. The proper thing is to avoid that. So some of the contemporary poskim wrote that they think that it's better than psigresha de lo nichalei, based on a Mishnah in Masechta Shabbos. The Mishnah says, if I know that a wild animal ran into my apartment and I want to trap the wild animals, I close all the windows and I close the door. So that's a violation of tzeda. What if I really want to go to shul? I'm not interested in, I know that a wild animal ran into the house. I know that by closing the door, let's say all the windows are closed, so the animal can't jump out the windows. The other thing is the animal can jump out the front door. I want to go to shul. I want to daven in the morning. I'm not interested in trapping the animal. But I know that by closing the door to protect my apartment from ganovim, I will be trapping the animal. So is that osur amutar? So the Rashba, on that Mishnah, in the middle of Shabbos, the Rashba says that that's permissible. And the Ran disagrees with the Rashba. He says, why is it permissible to close the door just because you're not interested in trapping the animal? That should be dependent on this machlekes harishanim about psikresha lo nichalei. So why does the Rashba think that it's better than psikresha lo nichalei? So several of the Achrayim think that we paskan like the Rashba here, and they explain why. The Yeshua was Yankif, and the Avdei Nezer, and several others. They explain the only time there's a prohibition, it's a big chiddush, the only time there's a din of psikresha is if I'm doing an activity, I'm handling something, and I'm doing a pula hamuteres, I'm not interested in the pula hasura, but I know that bebado is by doing this activity, I'm also doing a malacha. So that's called the psikresha. So psikresha, la nichalei, that's a machlekes harishanim, and if you really get stuck, then the paskim anoita lohakal over there. But over here, I'm not handling the animal. I'm closing the front door. And my interest is to close the front door, not to relate to the animal. The Mishnah says, a chiddush, if you close the door intending to trap the animal, that's an act of tzedah, even though you're not handling the animal itself. You're doing an activity on the door. The activity on the door and the windows, closing the windows, closing the doors, relates to the animal because that's what you have in mind. But if I'm closing the door, not intending to trap the animal, it's just that that's by the nature of things. When you close the door, the animal is going to get trapped. So the Paskim say we should Paskim like the Rashba, that it's not even called the Psikresha Lo Nichalei, it's less. Because he's not even doing a pu'ula to the animal where the malacha is happening. He's doing a pu'ula on the door. So Kol Zman, you're not interested that pu'ula on the door should relate to the animal. It's not even called the Psikresha. Same thing with the lights. If a person walks in the street, so if a person is scratching his back on the wall, and he knows that there's a switch behind him, so that's mamish, that's a psikresha. He wants to scratch his back. He doesn't care whether the light goes on, but the switch is connected with a wire to the light, so the light is going to go on. So that's a psikresha. But if the person is not scratching his back on the door, on the wall where the switch is, he's walking in the street and there's a sensor, and he knows by walking over here the light is going to go on. So that's an issue of a psikresha. Sometimes it's a psikresha de nichalei. I'm very appreciative of the fact that there's a light now. I'll be able to see where I'm walking. Sometimes it'll be psikresha lo nichalei. I didn't really need the lights. But other poskim say that if you really get stuck, strictly speaking, it's not really a psikresha. Because many achrayim say we have the right to paskim like this Rashba over here. L'chatchili should really avoid it because the Ran says that it is a psikresha lo nichalei. But with Mikra Din, many poskim say we paskim like the Rashba. It's not even called a psikresha. It's only called the psikresha if you're handling that item where the malacha is occurring. But if you're not handling it, I'm walking over here, and the sensor causes the lights to go on, or the camera causes my image to appear over there. I'm not really interested in the whole thing, so that's even less than a psikresha.
Is the definition of the mikra, the hotel door or the elevator, the first time, or all 10 times you're going to do it over the course of Shabbos?
Oh, you get stuck one Shabbos, so that's the mikra.
Maybe you should just go out and then come back till, you know, later in the day.
To the extent that you're able to avoid it, you should. But if you're going to be imposing on your hosts to sit there a whole day, they want to relax on Shabbos. They want to take a nap, and you want to sit over there. So if you're imposing, so it's also a makom mitzvah. So it's if it's a makom mitzvah, so then we're mekel on this. Yeah, but it's not right to do this heter every single week. This is an emergency heter once in a long while. It's not right to use these heter. Shuz the shuz, but makom mitzvah and so on. It's only once in a long while, not kavua.
If the light is
nichalei,
let's say it's your hotel room, and you
No. No, no. Then it's also. Then he is interested. Then he isn't. If you're not interested when you close the door, if you're not interested in trapping the animal, so then the Achrenim say we follow the Rashba. But if you are interested, I know that by walking over here the light goes on, and I do want the light to go on. So that's
a.
Yeah, you are. That's talking going to be a problem. Okay, that will be a problem. There is a Mishnah in Shabbos. Lo yetzei chai b'machta somuch l'chashecha shema yishkach l'yetzei on Shabbos. A person shouldn't walk out in the street before Shabbos with a pencil in his ear because he may forget and carry on Shabbos. Then the Gemara quotes one of the Amoraim, Hilchas Rapsa l'Shabbos. Then the Gemara says, Chai v'adam l'ashash b'gadu b'er Shabbos im chashecha, shem yishkach v'yetz, you have to check your pockets. The Gemara comments on that price, Hilchas Rapsa l'Shabbos. What does that mean? So Rashi says that the Amora is giving the Tana Yashikoyach. That's a wonderful idea, that Chai v'adam l'ashash b'gadu b'er Shabbos im chashecha. It's a very good idea. It'll save you from Chilul Shabbos. And others, they quote from the Vilna Gaon that others interpret in the Gemara, Hilchos Rapsa L'Shabbos doesn't mean Yashikoyach. The Amora is giving the Tana Yashikoyach for the din that he said. This will prevent you from being Mechal Shabbos. But rather, the Amora meant to say that not only is there a din, you have to check your pockets, Erev Shabbos Im Chashecha, before Shabbos enters, you have to be careful not to put things in your pocket all day long on Shabbos. Not only to check the Shabbos pockets before. So let's say someone is eating by someone else. You're visiting by someone else on Shabbos, and then you sneeze. So you take a tissue and you wipe your nose. So what are you going to do with the tissue? You're going to leave it on a table. It's not their heritage. You put it in your pocket. Then when you leave their home, you're going to forget that you're going to leave it in your pocket. So that's what the Gemara says. Hilchos Rapsa L'Shabbos. All Shabbos long, you shouldn't put anything in your pocket. I'm not talking about putting money in your pockets. I'm not talking about putting muktzah things in your pocket. You're not allowed to put things in your pocket that are not muktzah because Shem Yishkech V'yetzah. It's not only a din. Erev Shabbos Semcha L'chashecha Chai Varem Mashbish B'godah, but all Shabbos long, Hilchos Rapsa L'Shabbos, a person shouldn't put things in his pocket. So usually if you stay at a kosher hotel for Shabbos, so where do you put the key? So you put the key in your pocket. What, are you going to hold it in your hands? There's no chashash. If you hold it in your hands, you're not afraid that the guys are going to walk out in the street chutz le'erev and carry. He knows he's not going to carry if he has things in his hand. But things in his pocket, he's going to forget about. So really, one should try to be careful not to put the keys and not to put anything in their pockets all of Shabbos long. Even if you don't plan on going out, people always change their minds later on. More often than not, it happens that people put things in their pockets and then they walk out chutz le'erev. They don't realize.
You're stuck in a regular hotel for Shabbos. What about carrying in the hallways?
Carrying in the hallways on Shabbos, yeah. So the din in the Gemara, Tosis points out, the Gemara has this in Erevin, that if the hotel management has the right to switch the guests from one room to the other, if the other room is equally as good as the first room, or better, or more comfortable, so then nobody asks on anybody else. So then you don't need an Erev Chatzeres. Sometimes you have a hotel, let's say the Plaza Hotel in Yerushalayim, so some of the people live there kavua. Some of the people live there all year long. So those people do ask on the other people. That's the hotel management can't ask them to switch to a different apartment. This is their apartment for the last 20 years. They live in this apartment. Guests who come just for a few days, so they can switch you from one room to the other. But the people who bought into the hotel, there are a lot of hotels where people live there kavua. So true, the din is that an achsenoi doesn't aser if you have people who live there for less than 30 days, and people are living there for more than 30 days, so those who were there for more than 30 days do aser. Those who are there less than 30 days don't aser. Those who are there, let's say there's nobody there for more than 30 days. Everybody's there less than 30 days, and they do aser on each other. Unless it's the nature of the system is such like a hotel, they can switch you to any other room. So then nobody asks on anybody else. You have to find out the different kinds of hotels. Sometimes a hotel has people who live there kavua. and the management cannot switch them to another room. So then they do asr on all the other people. So you have to have, you have to see to it that they have an erev chatzeres.
Would that be if the person entered the building or just in your hallway, like first floor?
I think everybody has the right to go into the lobby. And the lobby, they would asr.
Let's go through the stairway outside.
That could be. You have to investigate the nature of the... How do they get from there, from the 10th floor, to the lobby? If it's a stairway outside, then could be that they don't ask. It's only if the drisa regal is within the same rishus hayochid.
How about carrying the key? If you can't use the key yourself, you have to keep going to use the room,
yeah, there's a question. If you have the definition of muktza, basically is a piece of junk, something that doesn't have hishtamshes. The Gemara says the laws of Muktzah were patterned after the laws of Kabbalah's Tumah. That in Hilchas Kabbalah's Tumah, there are four categories of things that are Mekabal Tumah. Odom, Mekelem, Ochlem, and Mashkin. Whatever doesn't fit into these four categories is basically junk. And that's why it's not Mekabal Tumah. So the basic definition of Muktzah is something that's junk. So let's say if you have a broken bottle, you have all the smashes to tiny little pieces of glass, so that's Muktzah. What if you have a kli? You have a kli shemalachta liyisr. If you have a screwdriver or a hammer, that's a kli shemalachta liyisr. So that's really not muktzah. That's a different isr. Kli shemalachta liyisr. So the tzorach gufo or the tzorach mukoma, you're allowed to move it. Let's say you have money on the table that doesn't belong. So you're not allowed to take off the money. Money is muktzah mamish. Money is considered junk. It doesn't have any hishtamshes. You can buy things with the money, but the money itself has no hishtamshes. A screwdriver and a hammer, that has a hishtamshes, but its main hishtamshes is lemalacha. So that's a klisha malach deliyisr. So if you left a, by mistake, you left a screwdriver on the table, so you're allowed to take it off. Letzarchem koma. If you need the screwdriver or a hammer to open up a jar of pickles or to bang on a walnut or something, so letzarchem gufi, you're allowed to move it. So that's a shaila. What if you have a kli, you have an electronic key that opens the door, you have a card, but it's called malach deliyisr. The only thing you use it for is this. What people use it to keep the place in a book, as a bookmarker? Probably not. The pashtus is that not. The pashtus is that an electronic kli is a kol malach deliyisr. So what if you have taka kli, she kol malach deliyisr. So there's a tesvus in Masech HaShabbos, tesvus kotzer Rabbeinu Tam. In the Sefer Yosher, it's more bariches that Rabbeinu Tam is of the opinion that that's muktzah mamish. They do not allow to handle it even litzorech gufo. The Ramah starts off by quoting this Rabbeinu Tam. The Ramah in Hilchos Shabbos quotes the Rabbeinu Tam that a klisha kol malach deliyisr is muktzah, but then he ends off, but you're allowed to move it litzorech gufo litzorech mukoma. So it's a contradiction. If you're allowed to move it, so if it's on Mekami, he says that it's only klisha malach deliyisr. It's not muktzah mamish. It's astira in the Ramah. So that's a shaila. How do you deal with that Ramah? So Moshe Feinstein in his tshuvas assumes that the Ramah is not paskening like the Rabbeinu Tam. Moshe assumes that a fan or other things that a mamish kol malach deliyisr. So he thinks that it's not muktzah mamish and it has the din like a klisha malach deliyisr. That letzorech gufo letzorech mukama would be muta. And others hold that so. Others hold that you should paskin like the Rabbeinu Tam, like the beginning of the Ramah, not like the end of the Ramah. It's a steer in the Ramah. First he says that kol malach deliyisr is muktzah, and then he backs out and he says you can move it. Let's all go for the sof mekam. So that's a shaila. Do you have to leave your electronic key by the desk downstairs and make up in advance? You have to tell him I'm a religious Jew and I can't even carry the key, and you have to have the non-Jew handle a key and open up the door for you, based on the kula of shvuz de shvuz b'makam mitzvah, or can you carry the key yourself? So many are of the opinion, not like Rav Moshe, many hold that a kol malach deliyisr is muktzah mamish, so you shouldn't handle it at all. That is correct. But opening the door is muktzah. Opening the door is a malacha. Still a malacha. Yeah, the guy is doing the malacha. The Gemara has a klal. The Gemara Maseches Avodah Zarah has a klal that if you're visiting by a non-Jew, you have the right to assume that stam kelim areina b'nei yaman, that he has pots and pans, frying pans, and everything that he cooks chazarin, And now he cooked something kosher for me. So if he cooked something kosher, I have to be worried about Bishul Akum. There's a din whenever a non-Jew cooks, so the Chachamim were so concerned about intermarriage, they saw Baruch HaKodesh. We live in a generation that more than 50% of the Jews are intermarried. It's unbelievable. So the Chachamim wanted to prevent intermarriage, so they prohibited Pasakum and Bishul Akum and Stam Yenam. All of this was because of Chasnus. They were concerned so much about intermarriage. So some foods, there's no Issa Bishul Akum on. If you have food that's Nachal Kmo Shu Chai, so there's no prohibition of Bishul Akum. Otherwise, there's a problem of Bishul Akum. So let's say you have such vegetables that there's no Bishul Akum on. And the Nachri cooked it on his kalim. So the question is, the Gemara discusses, you have to be concerned about the fact that the Nachri may have cooked chazer within the last 24 hours. If 24 hours went by since he cooked the treifah, so we assume that klisha ena ben yomo, the treifah bliya will be nois and tam levgam, and we pass on halacha that nois and tam levgam doesn't tassa. L'chatchili narlati, you cook in a treifah kli, even ena ben yomo, you have to kasha l'chatchili midirabona, gzeira ena ben yomo, ata ben yomo, but b'diyevit, if someone did cook kosher food and a treifa pat that's ena ben yom, it doesn't ask a of it. So the Gemara says, "Astam kelim shal nachrim arena b'nei yom." Yeah, but all the Paskin point out this doesn't apply to a restaurant. A restaurant, they're cooking food all day and all night. They keep on when they only have two customers a day. They made ham and eggs for somebody for breakfast, then they make for someone else something else. Then by the time you're going to come for supper, you have the right to assume stam kelim ena ben yom. For sure not. They don't have 1,000 frying pans in the kitchen. That every time another customer comes, they use a new clean frying pan. They use it over and over and over again. So in restaurants, you clearly can't apply stam kelim ena ben yom. And in bar mendain, even without the issue of the stam kelim, that there's no kula ena ben yom, you have to be careful about the bishul akum. Many of the people working in the kitchen will be non-Jews. It was a goyisha hotel. So for sure, a lot of people in the kitchen are going to be non-Jews, going to have a problem of bishul akum. Many people don't realize, they think they can identify what the fish is. They'll go eat the Orthodox people, Orthodox rabbis. I know Orthodox rabbis. They still think that they can eat cooked fish, kosher fish, in a restaurant because stam kelim ena ben yom. Stam kelim ena ben yom in a restaurant is unbelievable. How can anybody be so such a simpleton? And the Mishnah has a din. You're not allowed to eat fish unless it has the skin on the outside of the fish, and you see that it has scales. The din is, in order for a fish to be kosher, it has to have fins and scales. But the Mishnah says, any fish that has scales, the yodua that it has fins also. So you don't have to check for the fins, you just have to check for the scales. But you have to have the skin on the fish in order to be able to check for the scales. There's no way for the world's biggest expert to identify a fish. Once you remove the skin, the biggest ichthyologists, what do they call the experts in fish? Ichthyologists or something. They have no way of figuring out what this fish is. The only fish that we can figure out without the skin, Moshe Feinstein, is Mekel on the salmon. Because of the pink color, so that you can identify that that's a salmon. But and that's beginning to become a little shaky also. Because they figured out how come the salmon are pink. And they figured out how to make other fish pink also. It all depends on the diet. It's not because it's salmon. It's because of the diet that it eats. So if you give other fish the same diet as the salmon eats, so the other fish are also going to be pink. So the day may yet come that we're going to have to answer relying on the pink color to identify that it's salmon. But the day hasn't yet come. So we still make it, like Rav Moshe said, if you have a pink fish and you know that that's the color of the salmon, we're still make it to assume that that's salmon. Okay. But as far as all other fish are concerned, there are tens of thousands of different fish, and it's impossible. The world's biggest expert cannot identify the fish. Once you take off the skin, it's impossible to say, I have a tree sign that this is this and this fish. The biggest expert cannot identify what fish it is. To a non-kosher restaurant? Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Even according to the American law, sometimes they don't. Sometimes they can give you a substitute. They can advertise that it's one thing and it's really a different kind of a fish, and the government won't even penalize them because it's kamat the same. So in the restaurants also, if they run out of what you want, they'll give you something else that'll be sufficiently similar. Not really, but you have to be worried about all these issues, the Bishalakum and the Trefa Blias of the Kelim and the Kirvei Dogim. The Mishnah says you're not allowed to eat fish. It's not a Chumrim in the Rabbana, it's a simple din. You're not allowed to eat fish unless you know that it has the skin on it, that you can identify the scales. A lot of times in a fancy hotel, you'll have a microwave in your room, and you want to make some, you want to warm up some kosher soup that you brought along with you. So the pashtus is in a big oven. So the Shulchan Aruch assumes that there's always zeya, there's always evaporation, even though it's invisible. There's always going to be evaporation. So let's say the person before me cooked treifas. So there's always going to be some zeya that's going to treif, is going to become evaporated. Let's say we're in the middle of the oven. So it's going to be invisible evaporation, and the treif ablia, the milchig, the flesh, you get the treif ablia, but I have a chametz, the ablia is going to go up in the ceiling and it's going to be nivla into the walls as well. The question is, that's what happened previously, when the previous tenant was there yesterday and he cooked some treif food. But I'm there today, so I want to cook kosher food. So will the treif ablia fly from the walls back into the thing, into the food that I'm cooking today? So in the Shulchan Aruch, they talk about a situation where by mistake a person put a fleshig lid on a milchig pot. So they assume that the bliyah and the fleshig lid will go into the milchig pot, into the soup that you're cooking on the bottom. Why? A treif of bliyah doesn't fly in the air. So the answer they give in Shulchan Aruch is that if you would have had reitiv, if you would have had hot soup touching the walls are touching the lid, let's say the pot would be filled to the top and the hot soup is bubbling up and it's touching the bottom of the lid. So if you have hot roitev, so the hot roitev will cause the bliya to come out. So even if the pot is only full halfway and the top pot is empty and there's no roitev on top, so it says in Shulchan Aruch, hevel means thick steam, hevel is dina ki roitev, and hevel will also bring down the trefa bliya. The Hevel Dina Kiroitev is a problem in Shulchan Aruch. If you have a pot that's half full, half empty, usually if you pick up the pot, you stick your head in, so you're going to get burnt because there's thick steam over there. And inside an oven, we never see any thick steam. There's invisible evaporation. That's what the Shulchan Aruch refers to as Zeya. Zeya means the invisible evaporation, and Hevel means the thick steam. So inside an oven, very questionable whether b'diyeved, if you cooked kosher food and the oven was used for treifas this morning and it's still a benyama, very questionable whether it's going to really make the food treif now. Because the treif ablia can't really fly in the air, and usually there is no hevel, there's only going to be zeya. Zeya is the invisible evaporation, only one directional. Probably not going to bring the treif ablia out. But in a microwave oven, my impression is that there is hevel. Because a lot of times when you use a microwave for a few minutes, you open it up, so you see that there are droplets of water all over on the walls. It means that there was thick steam inside, as opposed to an oven, there's never any thick steam. There's only zeya. But in the microwave, you have a bigger problem. You really have hevel there, and the hevel can cause the treif ablia to come down. So if it hasn't been used in 24 hours, I move into an apartment in a hotel, and I know the microwave has not been used in the last 24 hours, okay, so b'diyeved it won't make treif, but l'chatchila there's a din, you're not allowed to use a treif a kli she'ena ben yom or gzeina ben yom ata ben yom. The chachamim were goyzer that you may make a mistake, you may by mistake use the treif a kli even when it is a ben yom. So that's not right. If you're using, let's say I'm staying in a non kosher hotel, and then they're serving breakfast in the hotel, so they're having Cheerios with milk, whatever, with soya milk, whatever I'm going to have there for breakfast. So I'm going to use a treifa plate and a treifa spoon. So that's bitzainen. So it says in Shulchan Aruch that there's no bliya bitzainen, provided that the plate is clean and that the spoon is clean. So there's no, the treifa bliya is not going to come out bitzainen, but you're not allowed to do it bikvias every single day to have breakfast in a treifa place. Using that treifa spoon and that treifa bowl, that's not permissible. But b'kroi b'yama, once in a while, b'beis shalakam, in a goyisha place, it says in Shulchan Aruch that that's permissible. But to use the microwave, that's b'chamin, that's not b'tzainet. So to use the microwave, even though it's clearly ene ben yomo, that's the gzera de rabbonin. You're not allowed to use a treifa kli ene ben yomo, a gzera otu ben yomo.
Is there any kasher in the microwave?
It is possible to kasher a microwave, yeah. They say the name of Rab David Feinstein. I don't know if it's his original or you heard it from his father, Rab Moshe Feinstein, that the whole blia that you have in a microwave oven is only because something may have evaporated. So you can kasher kibola kach polta, even though kashering with steam is a machlokes in Europe, whether that's acceptable or not. That's if I have a pot where I cook treifa soup, and the treifa soup is nibbled directly al yidei reitiv, so then there's a machlokes whether you can do hagola with steam. But if the whole bliya was al yidei steam, then the poskim say for sure you can do hagola al yidei steam. So here the whole chashash in the microwave is not that the chaza was touching the top. Someone was cooking chaza, some treifas on the bottom, and the thick steam caused the blia to become nivla into the top and the walls of the microwave oven. So if you put a cup of water, after it's ein beyam, the meaning is to wait 24 hours before you do a hagola. So if you put a cup of water, the whole chamber of the microwave oven, if you leave it long enough, the whole thing will evaporate. So the whole chamber will get full of steam. So that's a way to do the hagola. And then they say the name of Rab David Feinstein, but the circle where the cup was never had any steam touching that, so you should do it the second time. You should put a second cup of water and move it to a different location, so the second time you evaporate the second cup of water, the steam will touch that original spot that was covered over when you did the first Hagolah. Okay, so that's how they say from Rab David Feinstein. It's a pain in the neck, but it's possible to kasher the microwave.
Just double wrap the food, the same as in a regular
oven? Yeah. Yeah, if you wrap your food and the blia is not going to come in, so then there's no problem, right? Yeah, that's no problem. I remember many years ago, the OU used to have on Memorial Day weekend, they used to have always a weekend at the Hamowek. So they'd always be mechabed me that I should take charge of the singles function on Friday night. So they had all these singles asking all these crazy questions. So I remember they asked one question, is it permissible to go to a non-kosher restaurant to eat fruits and vegetables that were cut up? Do you have to be concerned that they use the tray for knife? That's the, if it's tainted, everything is cold. They're not cutting the fruits and the vegetables, manasat, everything is raw. So I said, I don't think there's a problem. I would imagine, I would assume that they probably washed it off very carefully before they cut the fruits and the vegetables. So there was one single fellow there. So he says, with all due respect, Rabbi, I used to work in a restaurant, and it's just not so. He said, you can have the fanciest, ritziest hotel, five-star hotel, and the chef is a slob. And he'll cut the chaza, and with the chaza schmaltz on the knife, he'll cut up your fruits and vegetables, and he'll serve it to you. And then you can have a hotel that's full of cockroaches and mice and everything. Not a five-star hotel, and the chef is makbid on the kiosk, and he'll be very makbid to wash off the knife before he cuts any fruits and vegetables. So he says it doesn't depend how fancy the hotel is; it depends on who the chef is. So you don't have the right to assume. And as the years go by, people who do hashgacha work say that this is oizgehalten. They say you cannot assume that the chef always washes off the knife before he cut off your fruits and the vegetables. It's just not true. Not necessarily true. Sometimes it will be true, sometimes not. It all depends who the chef is. So if they have cut fruits and vegetables, it's very questionable whether you're allowed to eat it. If the Taz and Yeridea writes, if they took a knife, even if they took a knife that has schmaltz, chaza schmaltz on it, and they cut a lot of portions of fruits and vegetables, so how long is the schmaltz going to last on the knife? So it's on the knife, so the first one or two or three platters are going to have schmaltz on all of the pieces of fruits and vegetables. From the fourth platter on, they're not going to have stuff. He made 10 platters, so three of them have chaza schmaltz